That is Tennessee Whiskey by Chris Stapleton. If you've been watching the news, you will know he's been nominated for a couple of CMAs. Good looking out to this Nashville young icon. And that's how I'm going to start this episode of Over 40 and Unapologetically Nerdy. Hi, I'm your host. This is Tenfro, Felicia Baxter. I'm spending kind of a dreary Sunday afternoon listening to music, creating collage on my MacBook Air, and thinking about space, binge watching stuff, and reading Star Trek fan fiction. And I'm going to just talk about that in a nutshell all today, in addition to Star Trek trivia that ended up being a pretty good addition to the show. And I hope you will enjoy it and take the time to answer the questions. And thank you for listening. Of the era from his 1964 album, A Love Supreme. The critics have said this is by far one of his greatest albums. I don't have this one as such, adding to my vinyl repertoire. I did order his as well as Blues and Ballads by Miles Davis, the early years. This was before depression and heroin and cocaine destroyed the natural, beautiful features of a great musician. And it's kind of cool. This is where I'm going to start this episode, just talking about another means of self-expression. Well, my self-expression. I really, like most people, I have a nerdy attachment to the space program. I was a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed teenager. Actually, I was 20. I had just turned 9. Just turned 20. Or was I 19? I think I was even about 19, but I turned 20 in the summer that I actually left home for the first time and ventured down to the Kennedy Space Center, which was one of the centers responsible for the shuttle program. I participated in International Space Year. I've talked about this on the show previously. But since that time, and just as of late, with the podcast, I've been actually just talking and you know, doing small skits and writing about the space program. I attempted to write a request for a grant to be able to utilize some of the data from NASA and also with the usage now of SpaceX. Years ago, the shuttle program was shelved, and now space travel and exploration has gotten another bump from the private sector with commercially available reusable booster rockets. So that in itself, I don't know if it's going to be used or misused by the military. Don't care. It is now allowing us the next phase of space exploration. Unmanned mission, now getting to Mars, is back to the moon and then on to Mars, is becoming closer in our reality with the success of the rover landing just the past week or so. But since the space shuttle program was shelved, you know, we've still, over the past decade, have been able to get a wealth of information from just our telescopes, the ones that are landed and the ones that are in a geosynchronous orbit around Earth, like Hubble. A lot of my images of the day that I post within the blog notes are images that have either their artist renditions of information coming back from Hubble or from the other X-ray telescope, Spitzer, as well as Kepler. Spitzer was retired in 2020. It was launched in 2003. And I've also spoken about Kepler on the show too. But it's this, the Spitzer telescope, it was several things. I did not know that until there was probably some malfunction or it ran out of fuel, but it wasn't benched until last year. It was launched a day after my birthday in 2003. It was to provide a unique infrared view of the universe that allows us to peer into regions of space hidden from optical telescopes. And with the images that they would capture, they were able to discover and then do with extrapolation, were able to report. And this was, I'm all late to the game, but in 2017, there was an article in Nature of this Earth-like planetary system surrounding their own sun of light. They called it TRAPPIST-1. It is, of course, is in the constellation of Aquarius, where they consider these particular planetoids or planets exoplanets. Just going to read you from the additional information of the image that I actually have in the blog notes. TRAPPIST-1 stands for Transiting Planets in Planetesimal Small Telescopes. This is actually extrapolated from Chile. Researchers using TRAPPIST announced that they had discovered three planets in the system, assisted by several ground-based telescopes, including the European Southern Observatory Very Large Telescope. But then Spitzer confirmed the existence of the two of these planets and then discovered an additional five, which they were able to use artist rendition to create the TRAPPIST system that was actually posted in the Nature article. I find it absolutely amazing because in my imagination, and plus since I've been binge watching Enterprise and then reading some of the Star Trek fan fiction, I can imagine these planets, which they all say that because of their density and their size and some of the other analyzed images and information, they look like they're all rocky. I would love, and plus, Aquarius, this particular system is about 40 light years away, which is 235 trillion miles from Earth. Would one of the space, could one of these be us, if we were to discover humanoid kind of life, what would it look like? And could you create a whole trap? Or a whole society or a whole alien fan fiction based on this system. It can go, it boggles the mind of the possibilities. I'm excited about learning more information. I haven't written anything in my, that's behind the paywall, but I think the imaginings of the TRAPPIST system is going to be right up there, things that I'm going to think about or I have an idea pinging around in my mind. When you think about the proximity to our solar system, why wouldn't there or couldn't there be a similar inhabited system that close to us. I don't think it's necessarily the Vulcans, but why can't it be the Vulcans or some other similar type of intelligent life form that we pick up a communication transmission, which we think is just background noise, and it's like some type of hidden communique within the X-rays because they have... because you can use that type of waveform that travels faster. And why can't there be some type of communication hidden within the system that some nerd at one of the Goddard Observatory basically picks up, or they pick up the communication on the International Space System and it's translated, and it is a friendly message to us from those beings from the trap system. I think that's really cool, and I think we got the technology that they're going to use one of the supercomputers to basically filter out the noise and clean up the signal, and that is how we're going to have our first communication. But I don't want it to be a horror movie, but it could be. It's either a distress signal, or it's a signal of an impending attack. That's even better. The people of that system just fended off a system that for a bale of marauding aliens, and they have sent out a warning signal to us. And of course, before it is deciphered and we figure out what to do with it, there's going to be someone that is going to there's going to always be someone that with nefarious intentions that is going to try to halt it, use it for other meanings to halt space exploration. However, the people of Earth will deal with it because it's an alternative storyline after we emerge. It either plunges us into World War III, or we're trying to emerge from World War III when they try to communicate with us again. That is how we're going to make true a different type of first contact instead of the Vulcans. That is how we're going to discover other aliens and what their true intent was. That's kind of cool. I think about that. I'm going to have to think about it. There's so many possibilities and so many storylines that I could possibly use. Also, next up on Hit Parade is... Why didn't that move up? That was still John Coltrane, but this is So What? From Kind of Blue, and I did actually order this, and I'll be receiving this album from Miles Davis, The Early Years. It's like my playlist has been reordered, but I moved this up, So What? It's now number, I think, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the playlist. This is an exemplifies before Miles Davis had his own sound deconstructed. Tempo and non-tempo is how it was described, the critic described John Coltrane. That fussiness, where it was no real rhythm, you can't really dance to it, it's just something that you bob your head to. Genius, but I still like this tempoed, constructed version of jazz. This, as I said, is from Kind of Blue, but then this is also Yesterday's from Ballads and Blues. It's just soulful. And even in spite of all of his conflict, you have to say that Miles Davis is one of the greatest jazz musicians that ever lived. And that's how I'm going to end this section with that sorrowful rendition, Yesterday's, from Miles Davis, Black Ballads and Blues. Is Yesterday's by the late great Miles Davis in his earlier album Ballads and Blues. This guy lived his life as if he wasn't worthy of the gift that he bestowed upon us for several decades. He died, I firmly believe, after reading Cicely Tyson's book, that he was conflicted. And he didn't, his lack of worthiness was living out his life in a world, a racist world, that probably never saw that he was gorgeous or beautiful, that he had a gift worth sharing to the world, and that made him special. Because it was during this time that J. Edgar Hoover thought that the scourge that was going to destroy America was jazz. And it was because it was food for the soul, and it served as a background to unite many people across the level, across racial divide. And if you were a big racist like this fool, it had to go away. That's why they came after Billie Holiday and they tried to kick all of these guys out. So living in a world where you have this amazing gift that didn't appreciate it, and definitely didn't appreciate that a black man was the best at his craft, I get it. And on that somber note, I'm going to be talking about and giving big ups to one of the greatest engineers of all time. This woman, what is going on? Okay. This woman, Miss Mary Jackson, this was actually just recently in the news. On the 25th, the NASA headquarters building in Washington, D.C. was officially renamed the Mary W. Jackson. She was the agency's first African-American female engineer. And this is apropos for the last podcast of Black History Month that I'm giving, paying her honor. She was actually famously portrayed in Hidden Figures, but she worked behind the scenes in the program for decades. Just getting her engineer degree during this racist period of time and just being allowed to work as an engineer outside of the admin pool was a great feat. The picture that I actually have in the podcast notes is just apropos for the time. She was one of the only three women depicted in this image, this early image, the high-speed aircraft division personnel. And I don't think those other two women were engineers, but there you go. She was the first. She's not the last, but she's one of the very few African-American or brown engineers, even in the program as we know it, even today in 2021. And it's about time. You know what I mean? Big ups to Dr. Mary Jackson, the first female African-American engineer. Great contributions to the space program, and a black celebrity, nerd celebrity. How cool is that? That's Jerry Goldsmith, the composer theme from Star Trek Voyager, the extended version. And as always, I've been binge watching not only episodes, the last few episodes of that great series, but also I watched Enterprise. I always ask myself this when I watch these shows. What the heck was I doing between like 2003 and 2005 when these shows initially came on? And one of the things that I find rich is during that period of time, I had just out-processed from the Air Force. And I had gotten one of my first of like 14 different medical licenses. And I went on the road and I actually started working in different states. And then as I have my current job, which I absolutely love, I have the opportunity to do what they call a project of love, or I'm only doing this. I don't get paid to do this, but I do have a good time when I do it. I have the time and now I have the disposable income to add to my models. For example, one of the models that I have been looking for is a large model of one of the Enterprise. I got the NX one, but yes, it's, I actually, when I left one of my jobs, I gave one of these models to someone that I thought was a friend of mine. And hindsight being 2020, I probably should have gave it to somebody else because we both ended up leaving that particular organization within a short period of each other. I think he would have kept it for me and he would have actually returned it to me. But this person, of course, would not or did not. No matter. Doesn't matter. But what I do have found out is that a lot of these models are available on Amazon and some of the fan sites and even on Etsy. And I am enthralled by some of the things that I didn't collect when these shows actually came out that were actually pretty good, the models. But one of the series, I always think about what was I doing during the time period that these different series actually came out. And one of the series that was like a prequel to the Next Gen and even the original series was Enterprise. And I started watching it and then I realized several things. I don't like the series. And I was like, is it because, is it a Scott Bakula thing, or is it because it's not all that well written? I think that's some of it. It is really difficult for me to get into that particular Scott Bakula anchoring a major show. Let's just start there. I had a problem also with the lack of chemistry between the associated characters. I had a problem with the guy. The black guy was a pilot. He had been a pilot on the barge. And he was actually a little bit on the sexy fine side. And it's on that note that I am going to look up Travis Mayweather. I wonder if there are, here we go. I was wondering if there are, yes, he's handsome. I dig these pictures. Alrighty, bro. Yeah, that's not the bucket challenge. Yeah, okay. And he even got finer as he got older. I like his smile. But he played the tragic character, very serious, very straight-laced. And I think they, unfortunately, underutilized his character on this particular series. But I found that to be true of most of the other... Holy crap-a-moly. Most of these characters that were part of the show, and you know, what are they doing now, blah blah blah. I always had a and I think just for ST convention, and I think you can tell, you can see like from the images that I was able to download and I included in the notes, this young man is actually extremely handsome. But his character, he just didn't have the script that really reflected it. And but the lack of chemistry of all between all of the characters, and when finding their groove, because the storyline was surrounding Scott Bakula's character, and it seems like that there was no room for any of these guys basically excelling, because the backstories and the discovery of these people that they were discovering during this period of time of space exploration was not too far from First Contact. There was a I skipped ahead and I couldn't watch a lot of the Scott Bakula's anchored show episodes, because as I said, I can't stand Scott Bakula. But it wasn't until like the last episodes that I actually allowed myself to actually watch. I didn't like the storylines that surrounded T'Pol, which was the Vulcan character. I didn't like Trip. He was the engineer. I didn't like any of his characters or any of his episodes. And he ended up going to a different ship anyways. But it really wasn't until, and I actually was writing this down because I was excited, because LeVar Burton played, he was actually the director of this episode. He and the Will Riker dude, they actually had many okay episodes. And I just realized the augments was also directed by LeVar Burton. That was actually episode 6. This is the heightened or the enhanced humanoid forms. And his episode, when he comes back with demons, this is the 20th episode, the 20th episode of the fourth season, where they return to Earth. Oh, this is to participate in a conference, and they basically, the xenophobic craziness that we actually experienced for the last 4 years, oh, it was right on point. It was just as if that ex-fool that was the occupant of the White House took his script, and that is how he scripted the last particular term of the presidency. It was, one, the episode itself was well written, superbly directed, and it was one of the only like three episodes that I could actually sit through that actually made sense. It was did surround T'Pol and the Trip character, because they used their clones to basically create a baby to prove that the races could not mix. However, the scientists that created the clone made a mistake, an editing mistake, that was why the little girl ended up dying, because made some mistake in the combining of her DNA, and he didn't do it right. So he created a lethal defect, but her lethal defect did not say that different alien, like Earth first, humans first kind of rhetoric, that wouldn't work. But what it did prove that you humans and scientists that don't follow the correct scientific protocol can make editing mistakes and then can set that little girl up to die. It was awful. But this episode, that, and then the episode following that, Terra Prime, was how actually it ended. They wrapped up that particular storyline, because that, if they couldn't figure out a way to prove that, number one, it's okay for humans to mate and have productive progeny, but it also stood for the beginnings of the United Federation of planets, the importance of space travel and discovery, and how we all had to learn how to live together. This was actually, both of those episodes appeared and were produced in May of 2005. Where was I doing in 2005? That's when I think I started, actually had traveled out to Denver for the first time when I had my Colorado license, camped across the country and parked in the RV park in Estes Park, and passed the same Silver Fox every single night. I'm coming back and forth down through Denver. Cell phone, first cell phone, no signal. It was awesome, but thankful for the time that I actually had out there. I'm glad I didn't waste time watching this whole series, because out of the 98, as I stated, episodes, there were only like four episodes that are worth to watch. Definitely Demons and Terra Prime are the top two to watch, and they were the last two of the three episodes at the end of the series. And because the central figure in the storyline was not Scott Bakula. Thank you, Jesus. So with me going off on Star Trek Discovery, why I hated it, Star Trek Enterprise, why I hated it so much, I'm going to now go into what I actually like. This part of the episode, I call this Star Trek Trivia. So I've made it very clear that I love Star Trek, and I actually basically, for the most part, I enjoyed the Voyager series. I had to skip through some of the episodes that featured B'Elanna Torres, because her character kind of gets on my nerves. The freaking Doctor, because the EMH, because he gets on my nerves a little bit. And Tom Paris. And anything with him and Tom and B'Elanna Torres, yeah, they got on my nerves. But I dug Tom Paris's love for the big gas-guzzling, supercharged muscle cars of the 1960s. I'm not a real gearhead because I can't fix anything, but I do love that era of American steel and speed. But I purchased a book written by Andrew Rucker, and it's probably one of the best purchases I've done in a while. And Star Trek Voyager trivia book. There are several others on the market, but I haven't purchased them because I don't think I'm finished with this particular trivia book. You can actually answer these questions that I've actually included in the podcast notes in the comment form at the end of the section. And if whoever answers the most correctly, I'll actually state your name on the show. Nobody answered any of the questions from last week's episode or last episode. So I'm hopeful by the time before I actually move this episode behind the paywall, somebody will actually take the challenge and answer the question. So the first question is, what is the duo that the Doctor and Seven of Nine sing together? That is followed up by a great, and I had forgotten that how beautiful Jeri Ryan's voice is. And that old melonhead doctor, the EMH, he actually can blow too. He just annoys me. The next question is, what is the Doctor? Who says the line, arm the photonic cannon? And what was the Doctor's original purpose? And those are the questions for this week's Star Trek trivia. And I hope you enjoy. And I can't wait to see who actually will answer the most questions. To this last section, and it's not last but not least. For this particular episode, I've started basically just doing little short segments and just talking in depth about one book at a time or a couple of things at a time. I don't have the news about when the next season of Discovery, if it's wrapped already, and when it's supposed to premiere. We were told last year that CBS had actually bought another season of Picard, but I have not heard anything on the news as far as, again, when they wrapped and when the next season is supposed to premiere on that. And then there's a new spinoff featuring a young Spock with Captain Pike, and that particular captain anchoring that particular series. So there's a lot that is supposed to come out in the Star Trek verse of it all, but nobody knows because of the shit show that 2020 was. A lot of things have been pushed and a lot of projects have been either on hold. I am confident that we are going to see a lot of this great content in the new series. It's a series that premieres on, actually, I think in about 4 or 5 days, a lot of this content is going to move to the new Paramount Plus mobile application. And basically, CBS or vice versa, they bought that particular studio. So a lot of the series that I've been enjoying have moving over to that. But there's still a lot of fan fiction that, one, I was not aware of that was present, that I'm actually just getting caught up on. And Christopher Bennett's Greater Than the Sum, which is a Star Trek fan fiction that is set in September of 2380. There was a starship Einstein, and of course the ship looks like the same model Intrepid class that the Voyager is, but it's a different ship that actually gets assimilated, and then the ship basically shows up in this particular series because that ship gets assimilated by the Borg cube that they thought was extinct. And then, unfortunately, the extinct Borg ship actually gets caught off from the hive. Their link is severed. So basically this rogue assimilated United Federation vessel is going and assimilating races, but they're not a part of the Borg collective. So it's basically set up. There is a mixed Vulcan and humanoid that is dealing with her identity. She's on board of this ship. There's a whole bunch of the whole crew. The first officer is there are a hodgepodge of different alien life. And it's representative of the Federation. So I thought this was apropos that I was reading this book at the time when I was just dealing or looking through Enterprise with T'Pol and the beginning of the Federation and how almost it didn't happen. And it was a Vulcan humanoid child that they cloned that ended up dying that they were going to use for nefarious means to project Earth first and not... that they were not, that the Earth should not have joined the Federation. But what movie is that? Oh, it's Discovery. When they get back to like the 31st century and they find out that Earth actually, when they had the whatever, when all the dilithium went inert during that period of time, Earth does leave the Federation. So I find it interesting that that part of the Discovery, that part of Enterprise, they dealt with Earth not joining and the Federation of Planets not coming to existence and then Earth leaving the Federation again. And some of the similar storylines picks up in a lot of the books as well as the spinoff episodes. So... I'm looking forward to Discovery republishing or going back into production and premiering relatively, probably not into the fall, but I'm looking forward to see how they deal with those extended and varied storylines and how Picard with Seven of Nine tie in the Borg threat. But this is one of those threads that is interesting in seeing how just how insidious and really weird the Borg is and the strength they had and how they abuse technology for what? They will do anything for perfection, but they could not see that if worked into more of a collaboration than a collective, they could have been so much greater and they could have existed peacefully in the future. But it looks like they become extinct or some version of them is representative. I'm wondering and I'm very interested in reading more about this particular book. And I'll let y'all know next week or I'll do an extra episode just to just update and how it all sorts out. Because I have a feeling that this rogue ship, the Einstein, which is a true collective with Borg cube technology, and Federation and how they exist because how can they exist when they're cut off from the organization of the collective and they're not also they are not under the protection of the ideas of First Contact, the Prime Directive, et cetera, I'm really interested in seeing how the action and this old goofy girl, she's a lieutenant and is a scientist, how she, all of that comes together as far as the existence of this ship. And are they going to have to destroy it so it won't go on to destroy the rest of the Federation or even assimilate unwilling races of people?
Thank you.
that is entitled From Star Trek First Contact. Again, apropos, because in the movie First Contact, which I also have recently watched, it was when the Borg actually went back into the past and tried to stop First Contact to assimilate Earth. Again, I'm talking about the Borg. It makes sense that I have theme music from those movies and anything from the episode. So in upcoming shows, you're going to hear probably me riff more on the Borg and what my thinking is, as well as tying in my idea about that distant star system Trappist. That's still niggling in the back of my mind. But that's where the end of the show. I had a whole bunch to say. Love to talk. I did get my shipment of course, a Borg cube, the Discovery spaceship, as well as NCC 1701, E-class of Enterprise. Check out the pins on Pinterest. It says, "What old nerds with disposable income buy?" I'm really true to that. Again, I got the time and I got the cash to spend a little bit about and having fun. If people don't like it, screw them. First about that attitude. People don't like it and you're not hurting anybody and not hurting yourself. Do what you do and do what you like to do. That's the bottom line if you have the time to do it. If people don't get that and they keep riding you, navigate to shipabagofdicks.com using my promo code 10frogotjokes to get a percentage off of your order. I think you'll dig it. I am going to stop that right there and move it back just a squeegee. and also navigate to Chatterbooks. I have Greater Than the Sum is available for purchase today, as well as other fan fiction and swag for purchase on that site too. And of course, I get a percentage, and if whatever bookseller, small bookseller that actually is carrying that book, they also get the mass majority of the proceeds from that sale. I hope my enthusiasm and how much I love creating the podcast has come across and you have enjoyed this exercise or this podcast as much as I've enjoyed creating it. And that's where I'm going to end it, with the main title of Voyager for just like 3.5 seconds, but I'm actually going to end with the end title track by Jerry Goldsmith and the Royal Scottish National Orchestra, because I think that's fitting for a Star Trek heavy podcast. And again, thank you for joining me, and I hope you enjoyed listening, and until next time.